This is Stephen Slack, and this is the Soul Center Fitness Podcast. Today we had Ryan Stevens on. He is a mentor of mine for 3 or 4 years now. Great athletic trainer, great leader, and also a very good fitness professional. And he is one of the people who kind of taught me how to look at a person, anticipate, adjust on the fly when you're training, and kind of break me out of my comfort zone with that stuff. Him and a couple of his people who are working under him really helped to mold where I am today. And it was a pleasure to talk to him about primarily warming up, but also we touched a little bit on leadership and things like that in the beginning. We will talk to him again in order to touch more on leadership and get a little bit more of an in-depth look into that, because that is his wheelhouse. But today, again, the warm-up stuff that he talks about is very rich in content and is very interesting for a lot of the trainers out there. And also for those who are just into fitness, it's going to be very interesting to listen to his methodology and why he does certain things in the warm-up and how it prepares you for your workout and for everyday life. So without further delay, here is Ryan Stevens, and it's a good one. Listen and learn. Hi guys, this is Steven again. I'm looking forward to this podcast. I have Ryan Stevens with me. I'll have him introduce himself and go into a little bit of the background, his background. And let's start this off. Ryan, can you introduce yourself?
Hey Steven, it's great to be with you today. Again, my name is Ryan Stevens. I am manager of athletic training, performance fitness, and physical therapy for Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health, our RWJ Somerset and our RWJ Hamilton campuses. And I've got close to 16 years now experience in the field of sports medicine and fitness. I'm a licensed and certified athletic trainer, as well as a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Started my career in sports medicine through a degree at Penn State. My focus, a few years after I graduated, I decided to make more of a focus in fitness as well, so I got my CSCS. And since then, over the last 15 years, I've really studied both realms to find the mesh between them and how they complement one another. I've also got a unique background in leadership, communication, interpersonal skills with my master's degree in humanistic and multicultural education from SUNY New Paltz. So the last probably 8 to 9 years of my career, I've really been focusing on more leadership growth and opportunities to make a bigger impact and to try and get to the point where now I have a team of athletic trainers and performance fitness coaches who I try and do my best to put them in a position to be successful to deliver that high quality of service that everybody deserves.
That's really cool. So I heard three specific things. I heard the first one was your original kind of background in the clinical side, mm-hmm. as an athletic trainer. Then second, kind of the sports medicine or more the fitness side.
Right.
And then last, that leadership, which I think is a really underrated kind of realm. I feel, I don't know if you agree with that, where not a lot of people in this fitness and clinical industry are focusing on that. Would you agree?
I think the big thing is a matter of self-awareness and emotional intelligence when it comes to sports medicine and fitness. We all have capabilities of being a leader. Everybody has different leadership qualities. It really comes down to, do you want to be in an active leadership position, or do you want to be a leader by example in the way you model your profession and yourself? People have different passions in that area. For me, I wanted to be in a position where I could make a big impact. And when it comes to developing programs and over the course of my career, I've started athletic training programs at 10 schools that never had it before, between here and New York. So that's one thing I've always been passionate about, is delivering sports medicine care to those who haven't had it before or who aren't used to a high level of it, to a new level. And those are opportunities that come when I get into a position like I have right now. But on the other end of it, when you mentioned the aspect of leadership, that is very important for all of us, no matter what our role is, to cultivate those skills, because we have to have influence. And in fact, recently I just gave a talk on this at our annual athletic training symposium that we do every summer for Robert Wood Johnson Barnabas Health. And my talk was about being a better communicator so you can gain influence, because we have to build rapport in what we do in order to have the opportunity to make an impact, to influence others, to trust us, to listen to our recommendations, whether it be in fitness or in sports medicine. Or it might be something where we just want to change something that isn't working really well for us. And so we have to have influence and we have to have rapport so that others can hopefully buy into what we're trying to change. And it all starts with understanding yourself better. And then after you understand yourself to the best of your ability, then you have to understand the needs and the wants of others. You know, that whole seek first to understand before being understood,
yeah.
Dr. Stephen Covey, that's something that we have to really make a priority in any realm of leadership.
Yeah. So it seems like also the last thing on leadership, because I know we got to go into some of our stuff, but it's interesting how you were mentioning everybody kind of has to be a leader in some way or another. And do you feel like a lot of your job is also kind of teaching others, people under you, how to be a leader, whether it's through that kind of active, like you said, but also through that just as you go, lead, as mm-hmm. you're doing things, leading through actions?
Yeah, absolutely. I try my best to make that a priority. A big part of that is trying to empower my team mm-hmm. to allow them to make their own decisions. You know, at times there has to be guidelines and there has to be certain ways things are done at times, but there's other times where I may come up with a project or they come up with a project and we talk about the expectations and we talk about the overall principle of it,
yeah.
but then allow them to do it and run with it.
Yeah.
So I want them to have the autonomy to grow while also having me and their other teammates as a reference, because I want them to be successful as well too.
Yeah.
And I feel that because of a lot of the mistakes I've made in my career that I've grown from, you know, I want to help them avoid those same mistakes when they do, whether it's a project or a special initiative or even a big project.
Yeah.
I want to help them be successful through my experience, but also trusting them to use their own spin on it so they can be successful and develop that own their own leadership skills.
That's awesome. Yeah, it seems like it's a very fine line when you do
it.
It's like an art form in a sense,
and
sort of like training.
It's very tough at times because sometimes it's very easy as a leader to want to jump in, and I'm guilty of doing this, and I feel like I've gotten better at it, and I'm still trying to be better at it, but sometimes you want to just jump in and say, hey, you know, I'd like you to do this, and then I want you to do it this way. Sometimes you have to do that if there is a certain expectation and if you don't want to have any miscommunication. But other times you have to step back and say, this is what we need to finish. This is what we need to do. How do you want to do it?
Yeah.
And some people are comfortable getting those instructions and some people aren't, because some people want to be told exactly what to do because they want to be successful. Others like having that complete freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
you really have to learn who you're working with to determine how much of that instruction you have to give or how much not to give and allow them to just run with it.
Yeah.
And that's a fine line that takes, you know, a lot of honing to work on.
It sounds like a whole nother podcast topic.
100%.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of steer us on to what we were going to talk about, warm-ups specifically.
Yeah.
And got your background, but why? I know a lot of your background touches a lot on warm-up. And I know when I was working with you that warming up was a huge part of what we did. Why so much attention on the warm-up? Can you kind of give a background in that?
I look at it two ways. We place a lot of attention on our warm-up because, A, we want to prepare the body for the activities and the demands that it's going to have in the very near future and do it in a way that is going to enhance their ability to move well, to create force, to decelerate. On the other end of it, because of my experience as a certified athletic trainer, I've seen tons and tons of overuse injuries. I've seen lots of conditions that potentially could have been avoided or reduced the risk of it happening had that athlete had better biomechanical control, had better lateral pillar stability, had better force absorption. You know, so we build in corrective type programming in our warmups to reduce the risk of those injuries that we've seen happen so many times. So we see the warm-up as an extended part of the workout. You know, the warm-up is a little bit of a workout for a lot of people, but it's very purposeful and the way that it ramps up to proactively address the most common issues that pop up in those overuse repetitive stress injuries that we work with out at the schools or even, you know, in our clinics.
Yeah, so you're kind of getting a chance in the warm-up to touch on some of these movements that it's sort of like an assessment in a sense. You
Correct.
Can kind of see how they are in general, but also that day, what's changed. But then it seems like also in your warm-ups,
you also prepare the body for, like you said, what's about to happen, not just assessing.
Correct.
And that's pretty cool.
And that's a big part of it, is it is a mini assessment every day. And as the coach, even if you've got a large group, you should be floating and be present enough to be able to see everything that's going on, position yourself in a way that that's effective at that. And you'll see if they're not moving well. You'll see if certain people going through your warm-up have limitations and restrictions, because this warm-up style exposes that. And then you have a choice as a coach, that do we move forward with the planned program of that day, or, you know what, things are popping out that you think might affect the quality of that program. So you're going to either regress slightly and throw in some correctives, or throw in some other type of exercises to address that.
Yeah.
Or you're going to change course completely just for that day and work on the foundation, so that you can hopefully the next day, the next week, get back to what the original plan was. We never want to get people hurt while they're working out.
Yeah.
But also we want athletes to feel the moment they, even if it's a baseball player, the moment they pick up a baseball, if it's a basketball player, the moment they pick up that ball, they, that very first moment of sport type movements, we want their body to feel prepared. And what we found is by doing this style of warm-up before they even do any sport specific movement, they can hit the ground running 100% with no delay.
Oh, okay. That's very interesting. It's cool that you talked about kind of switching up the game plan. I know I want to talk to that about that a little bit later, and I think I will, but that's just a cool concept that I don't know if a lot of trainers are using, and it's kind of cool to hear, refreshing to hear that. Now, I want to kind of talk about specific versus general warm-up, and I know you touched on that the correctives are kind of in the warm-up already. Does that mean let's say you're a bodybuilder, or I know you deal a lot with more with sports specifics. Let's say you're a pitcher, and all they're going to be doing that day is, let's say, upper body work. Are you going to be doing their full warm-up, a complement of warm-up exercises, or are you going to adjust that warm-up to just focus on the upper body?
I think it's a mixture of both. There is a component of every movement in sport that involves almost all parts of our body. So, you know, our particular warm-up program has 14 levels of build-up, and then there's also an additional 8 levels of power prep. We won't necessarily have to do the power prep, the more dynamic stuff that day, if it's someone who is not going to be doing dynamic activities. So if we're just doing a standard lift, but we're not going to be doing any agilities, we're not going to be doing any plyometrics, well, then we really don't need to do the power prep on that day. But the rest of it, the stability and mobility work in the beginning, and then working on more advanced mobility and compound movements, and then movement patterns, regardless of what sport you're doing, there's a benefit to that. So my answer to that is yes, every time there is consistency with what you do in the warm-up. And then if there are sport-specific or movement-specific characteristics that you want to address in further warm-up, the beauty of this system is it only takes about 10 to 12 minutes to go through. So you have, after that, you can get into those sport-specific movements. You can get into more of those pattern-specific things that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
By prepping the body in general for the demands of whatever they have to do.
Yeah, and I think it seems like it's kind of more of that, the view that fitness is taking in general, where it's that kind of that clinical view where it's like now they're realizing everything is connected. Your ankle could start to affect your shoulder up the chain. So if your squat's looking a little different, that could potentially affect your upper body day. I don't know if you agree with that or
100%. And that's why we start all of our warm-up programs with anti-rotation and anti-movement stability training, because
yeah,
we work on that pillar. But it's not just typically static holds, it is slow controlled movement pillar control. And then we work in lower extremity and upper extremity mobility, hips and shoulders, thoracic complex, because those directly play a role in total body movement. And if you're a pitcher and you can't hinge or you can't decelerate, your rotator cuff takes more of that stress and that deceleration. Or if you lack thoracic rotation and extension, you're not going to be able to get into that cocked arm position to truly unload and store your energy to deliver quality mechanics. That's just one example from a pitcher.
And
same thing holds true in any other sport. If you don't move well, then you can't perform well. And there are people that hide it very well. And you can have, you know, look at Major League Baseball, look at professional sports. There are athletes who probably would score very low on the FMS. It doesn't mean you can't clean it up. As a coach, I think it's a more important thing to clean up the FMS stuff with people who are just getting into movement programs. Whereas if it's a more established high-level athlete, then it's a matter of knowing that athlete really, really well and figuring out what you need to fix and what you leave alone.
Yeah,
and
it gets a lot more complicated. That's where the difference
is as a coach.
Yeah, I know that's something I struggled with in my personal training career is, you know, I would think, okay, you know, the FMS, you clean up everybody's, you focus all on that. But then when, like you said, you start to deal with higher level athletes, mm-hmm. and you start to throw a little wrench into their mechanics, next thing you know, they're all over the place and injuries start popping up. So,
right. And I think what's nice about this kind of approach is I am not technically, there are times when we coach mechanics, absolutely.
Yeah.
If it's really off, but by cleaning up the foundation, the body takes care of itself.
Kind of a reset.
You know, if someone lacks hip separation with their stride when they're sprinting, you know, you can cue them over and over to, you know, drive the knee into the glass and get more hip separation and more. But if they lack that hip separation and can't do, you know, a single leg bridge with a knee tuck or even just a march, you know, with a good high knee position with good balance and stability, it's going to be hard for them to do it dynamically. So by addressing it with correctives, you hope that the body allows it to happen naturally because the body can now do it without being held back. And that's where those slight changes happen. You look for those. And that comes really from a history of, you know, what always were the common rehab exercises I was doing for those who came in with hamstring strains or back pain or patellofemoral knee problems or shin splints. This system is not something I created 100% on my own. This is a mesh of, it's a salad. It's a mesh of a bunch of mentors I had, you know, in my years working even before I came to Robert Wood Johnson with, you know, Paul Collodi taught me a lot about this. Yeah. He was my predecessor in terms of he hired me to come on to Somerset Medical Center's team. And then a lot of this comes from Exos, Athletes Performance, Training for Warriors, Functional Movement Systems, Animal Flow. There's a lot of those built into it. What we've done is taking all of those, put it in an order that we feel works really well, but also created a matrix so the coach at any time has multiple options to choose at each level of the warm-up based on who's in that group. That allows for easier regressions, progressions, while still accomplishing the goals of each component of the warm-up.
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's two points I want to touch on. First, how the warm-up gives the coach the ability to be as creative, or if they're a little nervous, it gives them a format to follow. So it has a lot of, it's sort of like you were talking about in leadership, where, you know, you can get highly specific and give them the details, or you can have them start to show their true colors in this workout, in this warm-up implication. And then the other thing is just how I love this warm-up because it's got so much in it. It's got, like you said, it's got the hodgepodge of all these different things, and you've done a nice job of tying it all together into one concise warm-up. So I actually want to get a little more specific into the warm-up and just kind of briefly touching on each one of the boxes that you have. You said the 14 points.
Right.
And maybe not as much as the power prep. We can touch on that if we have enough time, but let's start with the 14 points of the traditional warm-up.
Absolutely. Well, the way our matrix is set up is there's 14 levels. Each level has four exercises in general that the coach can choose from or the athletic trainer. And then you develop your warm-up from this. So we always typically start with total body stability, anti-rotation, some sort of Pavlov press, you know, various positions, or even, you know, supine anti-movement chops where you lay on your back with a med ball and you chop across side to side without your body coming along for the ride.
Yep.
Just something to create that anti-rotation stability at a very low level. We want the multifidi, the quadratus, we want those deep lumbar stabilizers to just kick on before the big muscles are coming in. So the key with this is it's low level. It's not a lot of resistance, but it's just enough to get the stability system working so that you can have that foundation of stability.
Yeah.
And then after that, we go and we work on anterior, posterior, and lateral rotational activation with a focus on anti-movement. So, you know, some sort of a shoulder tap or a three-point plank, some sort of beast stability. So on all fours, but your knees tucked underneath you and elevated. So we're working on lifting up one limb, lifting up two limb, rotational with a more of a front side focus. We also may throw in, a quarter Turkish get up or something just to activate the front
Anything
side.
Anything that's going to get that front working. Okay.
Exactly. Then we have the backside posterior. So whether it's bird dogs or a bridge variation, crab, something that activates the posterior chain. Ideally, we try and throw in an anti-rotation component we're trying to force the body to activate the extensors, all right, anti-flexion in a sense. And then also the lateral rotational. So this is where like side plank variations, but not just a static side plank, more so a side plank with a reach an overhead pal-off press that really kind of recreates a side plank type feeling. You want a side plank stability, an anti-side bend without the compensation and
hips turning.
Exactly. You want to have slow control movement.
And it seems like on this as well, you can, for higher level athletes, you can make it as movement based as you want. And then if you're training somebody who's maybe 80 years old, you can keep it as static as you want in a sense.
Wonderful. Yeah. Absolutely. This particular program can be for any age, any ability level, because you can change and regress.
It just comes down to the coach's mind and what he's able to apply in a sense.
Correct. Absolutely. Yep. So after we go through that stability sequence with slow movement, then we go into more of our mobility. So what we work on is hip lower extremity mobility, almost like similar to correctives for the active straight leg raise from the FMS. It might be knee hug bridges, it might be hamstring pumps, it might be a pigeon, so you're working on hip external rotation mobility, piriformis, but all active, slow, and controlled versus just static holds. Once we do that, then we hop up to do upper body and thoracic. So we work on thoracic mobility first with a variety of ways, whether it's half kneeling or quadruped or standing. We're working on thoracic rotation and extension, most common area of dysfunction in the upper body for lacking range of motion. And then after that, we get into a single planar movement just to try and open up the anterior chest, so upper extremity anterior mobility, just maybe whether it's seal claps or, standing external rotation with your arms at your sides, just to get an active stretch of the anterior aspect of your
kind of
your chest cavity.
Unshrugging that posture.
Exactly, undoing the postural issues we have all day. And then you put it into more of an upper extremity functional mobility, we call it. So you're combining movements, whether it's a back scratcher or what we call seat belts, where you do, a diagonal pattern. Maybe we're doing a diagonal reach or a 90-90 shoulder extension and external rotation. We're doing a variety of movements that combine multiple patterns and multiple directions. So that's where we go. Thoracic rotation, and then we open up the front side, and then we put the pattern together with a more functional mobility.
Okay, yeah.
Following that, we get them on the ground, and we call it the primal stability level. But basically what we do is we take that activated stability we created, we take that enhanced mobility that we created, and we combine them into a loaded position that forces a little more shoulder or hip range of motion. So this might be, taking from the animal flow. This might be a crab reach. This might be a beast position into a scorpion. It might be a beast position into a kick through.
Yeah.
Because then you're truly working on closed chain position. You're still gaining range of motion, but you're doing it in a more active way that takes more stability compared to the levels before it.
Awesome.
On a side note, what you'll find is that level one is easier than level two. Two, three, and four, the anterior, lateral, and posterior can do it in any order. But then after that, you got your mobility. And it kind of works in a way that the one before it makes the one after it better.
Okay.
That's
like
the purpose.
Like a pyramid in a sense.
Exactly. What we found is by doing it in this order, A makes B better versus if you were to do B first, A wouldn't be as good afterwards.
Yeah. Huh.
So that's our purpose with that. After we load them on ground-based stuff to increase that, then we start working on more of our hip patterning and our functional range of motion. So we do some standing hip mobility work. Maybe we do some Frankensteins, some knee hugs. We work on that hip mobility standing, which is basically a standing version of level five, which is on your back or on the ground hip mobility. So we take those same patterns, but now we have them gravity, having you fight gravity while doing standing.
So there's stability and mobility.
You're doing the same movement, but standing instead of on the ground. After that, we'll work on our hinging because a lot of people have trouble with their hinge patterns, yeah. Two-leg or single leg. Mm-hmm. We work on a variety of RDLs, deadlift patterns for that, followed by an even higher level of lower extremity mobility. So now we're maybe working on some inchworms, some world's greatest stretch variations,
okay.
Kickstand rotation, things that now are going to that end range of hip mobility, but also bringing in that thoracic mobility as well too, but require more level of stability than the levels before.
Okay, yeah.
So these are more those complex movements.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Lots of coordination involved and full range of motion. Yeah.
100%. And then we'll wrap it up with the last two levels, which can be done in either order with either a lunge, the lunge pattern, or a squat pattern, and linear and lateral version.
Okay.
So we've done everything to try and enhance the squat and the lunge pattern. So now we actually have them do a lunge variation or a squat variation. Based on, you know, you could do a lateral version, you could do a split squat, you could do a forward lunge,
yeah.
a retro lunge, you could do a lateral lunge, you could do a rotational lunge. We want to work on that lunge squat pattern at the end because hopefully everything we've done has built up to the point where they have pretty good lunge and squat pattern at the point.
You've got them as prepared as you can
exactly.
get them for it.
And yeah. then we feel at that point they're prepared for further activities. Now, we're not going to go over it, but power prep will be the next thing.
Yep.
We have 8 levels of power prep, more of that dynamic work.
Yes.
Exactly. And also, if it is something that's going into a lift, then at that point, we also might get them doing some push-ups or some more upper body push and pull, just low level, just to prime the strength component
yeah.
of that.
Priming the movement.
That's where we would add that in before actually getting into the true lift.
Okay, cool. I love that strategy. I know ever since I learned that from you, I've been implementing that into my programs after mm-hmm. the warm-up, then kind of have it, I call it the post-warm-up warm-up.
Yeah. Where
it's like now, hey, let's start to prime the system. You're not trying to fatigue them. You're just mm-hmm. trying to get them ready for it. And the power prep, we will go into, maybe I'm going to have to set up another time because you got between the leadership and the power prep stuff, we got a lot of stuff we can still touch on. But I want to talk a little bit about internal cues versus external cues. And I know that you like the external cues for something, but basically, would you use internal cues for anything?
So what you're referring to is kind of the science of cueing. Nick Winkelmann,
yeah.
Gabrielle Wolf, they've done research on this and have found that by providing external visual cues in rehab and exercise setting, there's a ton of positive outcomes of that. You know, whether it's higher EMG readings, increased retention, mm-hmm. Quicker learning curve, increased less errors, so increased ability to be correct and accurate with the movement that's
yeah.
being coached. The reason being is that when you use external cues, meaning, you know, a visual or something outside of the body, there's less micro choking that occurs. Whereas if you use an internal cue, if you talk about an anatomical body part, if you talk about, you know, the knee, the body has to almost go outside of itself and look at that knee, because sometimes what we have are spatial proprioception.
Yeah.
We may see our knee and you're telling me, don't let your knee collapse. I don't feel my knees collapsing, but it keeps collapsing. Because to me, I'm used to that.
Yep.
I don't know what it feels like.
It doesn't feel abnormal.
Not to collapse.
Yeah, and they don't have an awareness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When it comes to the internal cues, what they have found is neutral or the internal focus cues are effective in someone who is truly in tune with their body, high-level athletes
okay.
who understand the way they move really, really well. But even in those cases, most of the time, you still want to go with that external focus because that allows the body to you picture what you need almost through visualization.
Yeah.
So for example, if you're doing a plank and you're doing shoulder taps, I like to use the expression of don't spill your soup. There's
yeah.
a bowl of soup on your back. Don't spill it. They can imagine that bowl of soup on their back and they're trying not to spill it so they don't burn themselves.
Yep.
But if you say, don't move your back, well, they may not realize they're not moving their back.
Yep.
And then what part of my back do you mean? So by creating that visual image,
yep.
you get them to the achieved desired result.
Yeah,
what's key is with those external visual cues, you create the image of what you want it to look like and let the body take care of itself and make it happen.
Very interesting. It seems like a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems maybe that's just how the human brain works.
Right.
It doesn't work by isolating and zoning in. It's the body likes to move holistically and naturally. And
right.
when you say, hey, don't let your knee going to valgus 10 degrees or, you know, obviously we wouldn't get that detailed,
but some people would say that.
Yeah.
Some coaches say that thinking like we understand it.
Yeah.
But in the ears and the mind of the person you're giving that message
they're
to,
they're like, what?
They're like, what are you talking about? Or I don't understand what that means.
Yeah.
You know? So that's where you have to be very, very clear about using terms that they understand and can pick up versus just ones that you know what they mean.
And it's a hard art form. I know that I struggle with it. There's times when I catch myself and I'm like, all right, make sure that hip, lower that hip just like wait, what am I talking about? Mm-hmm. And then you have to get really, you have to work your brain and you have to really think creatively to get this person to have that external or that visualized cue that's a little bit more natural.
Right.
So, again, another art form, it seems.
Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I want to touch last, we already touched on it a little bit, but audibling. Mm-hmm. You said that you see something in the warm-up, you can kind of take a direction off course if you need to. Whether adjusting it totally or just fixing a few things with some correctives. That's really cool concept. Do you feel, I'll kind of go more general and simple with this answer. Do you feel like that's one of the biggest things that a trainer could know?
Yes, absolutely. I think having the confidence to do it, and that's what's great about having a system in your warm-up is that you have leeway to do it while still staying consistent with the goal of that warm-up.
Yeah.
But absolutely, when you're working with a 65-year-old guy who doesn't squat well, and you know if you're calling for a squat pattern warm up and it's not going well, absolutely, regressing that or lateralizing it to something they can be successful with, but also that complements that pattern. So, if there's people that can't do certain movements in your warm up, you absolutely have to have the ability to give them something else that will accomplish the same goal, but at a level that's appropriate for them. And that is not only, that comes more from my rehab background, because that's what we do in rehab is we start out at base one after injury. What can they do now? Okay, now they're at level two. I can progress to this.
Yeah.
In fitness, you're going the opposite direction. You're working, your ideal is here, and then you're working back just enough to get them to do it, to get them to a point where they can get to where you want them to be. So that's where, and I even think in times in rehab, we can do that more too.
Yeah.
You know, have that higher aspiration of, we want them to move here. I'm just going to regress it just enough to the point it's appropriate for them without damaging the healing process, but still challenging them enough that they're getting toward that goal versus just doing 3 sets of 10 of straight leg raise, on the table, doing something that's super simple that's really not challenging them toward their progress.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I love that fact of being able to, you pulling up, not totally forgetting about the pattern, not saying, oh, wow, they can't squat. Let me go to something completely different, you know. Instead of that, now you're finding strategies to work the same pattern just at a lower regression, or finding where their struggle is, basically. And that's again another art form that is crucial. I'm glad that we talked on that.
Yeah, I think there's one more thing it's important to mention too before we wrap up with the warm up. It's in that same line. When you're working up with a group of people, ideally you want to have them all doing the same warm up because then it feels like that team, that camaraderie component of it. But you are going to get people that need to be regressed or lateralized a little bit, and it's okay to have that, helping them to understand that it's more appropriate for them. So that's where it takes a great coach to communicate that ahead of time before you even start. There may be some of you that we make some adjustments to on the fly. It doesn't mean you're failing. It means that we're helping you with something that's more appropriate for you. That's also where it really comes into play to do timed warm-up versus reps. Because, Stephen, what might take you, you know, 10 seconds to do 4 world's greatest on each side, maybe I'm more out of shape and I can only do 2. Well, then you're waiting for me to do my last 2.
Now
and
you feel like you're the last wheel or you're worse.
So you say, everybody's going to do this for 15 seconds and you get in as many reps as you can in that 15 seconds. And then we're all moving together the next one. I think that's important for a coach to keep that, because it helps to build that confidence. It doesn't make someone feel like they failed.
Yeah.
And it also allows you to visualize, oh, they're not catching up. I'm going to work with them on the side. They're going a little slower, and I'm going to give them some homework.
Yeah, that's a great point. I love that point because I think I want to try that out, where it's saying before the warm-up, I struggle with that. A lot of the group things, everybody's thinking, taking it as an insult. Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to change it for me. But letting them know beforehand, and that... that's a game changer there. Mm-hmm. If you can get good at making people feel like they're not stepping back, they're just doing better for their body. They're correct. All on the same path.
Correct.
So that's cool. I have to end it here. We're out of time, but thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking about this warm-up. This is incredibly informative, and I am going to have to set up another one because there was way too much stuff we didn't cover.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here with Steven. Yep. You know, I've always enjoyed our interactions, and I think you're doing some awesome stuff with this podcast, so thank you for doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. As always, it is a pleasure and a privilege to talk to Ryan Stevens of Robert Wood Johnson St. Barnabas, and he's been a mentor of mine for 3 or 4 years now and continues to be, and I'm very appreciative of that. I look forward to talking about leadership more in more depth with him in a couple of months, I hope, and we can kind of really get into what he's very, very good at in that leadership realm. And if you have any questions or concerns, you can email me at soulcenterfitness@gmail.com, and I look forward to hearing your feedback. Again, guys, thank you so much. This is the Soul Center Fitness Podcast with Steven Slack, over and out.